Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Hello, this is Abe Thompson with New Cyber Frontier. I'm your host today on the podcast. I have the distinct privilege to come to you from the SecureSec campus here in Colorado Springs, and I get to introduce a friend, colleague, and don't tell him, but he's one of my heroes. But it's my delight to introduce and welcome to the show Admiral Hank Bond, principal at Bond Enterprise Group. Sir, how you doing?
I'm good, Abe. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me, and I'm enjoying your spaces, and I'm looking forward to a good conversation.
Well, you know, it's certainly wonderful to have you. We've had a lot of similar things in the past. We share the Navy piece. And so one of the things I wanted to kind of start off with is just have you tell us a bit of your story, sort of what you matriculated through and your experience in the Navy, and then kind of where you are now and what you're thinking about next.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm one of those guys that's, you know, born on the crest of a wave and rocked in the cradle of the deep. My father was in the Navy, he was a submarine driver, and so that's what I always wanted to do. So I ended up getting a commission in the Navy as a submarine guy, as a nuke, and went through, served in two different submarines, and then transitioned in the 90s into the IT business of the Navy and in the joint world, and learning, and this is really before the kind of the bubble was even halfway blown up in terms of, before it burst, if you will, around 2000. So it was good to catch the wave of kind of the chaos of web, the Navy and the joint world implementing web technologies, sure. Business to business, ERP solutions across the whole range. And then serving in the capacity of shore-based command and control nodes like Navy Telecommunication Station Guam, NavComStay, Guam, and then serving on USS Enterprise on Admiral Stavridis' staff, the Enterprise Strike Group back in 2003-04, Navy staff work in the N6 on the Navy staff, and then went to Italy, to Bella Napoli, or, you know, not so Bella Napoli. It is a beautiful place.
Napoli.
Yes, at a distance.
Yeah, but, just don't look too closely, right?
So that was really quite exciting there, working at the Sixth Fleet, Navy Sixth Fleet, and Naval Forces Africa and Naval Forces Europe, and responsible for all the IT. Yeah, wonderful assignment for the family, too. Then back to the Strategic Studies Group for the Navy, and then I was selected for flag rank. Went to Iraq as the J6 for U.S. Forces Iraq, and did about 14 months there, finishing up in December of 11. So wrapping up. So my focus has been, and then back and finished up my career at as the J6 and the Deputy Operations Officer for the J3 Deputy J3 for Cyberspace Operations at NORAD U.S. Northern Command.
Sure.
And then since then, I transitioned out of active duty and at close to the end of 2014. And for the last almost 4.5 years, I've been working in the private sector and continue to do that, focusing primarily on cyber, but also IT, served as a CIO, served as a CISO, to kind of have that. And then, of course, nuke power, that whole DNA, I think has served me well over the years.
Meticulous, you know. I early in my early days on submarines, spent a lot of time with the nuclear powered and nuclear trained officers, and it was that was an intense life. And you know, there's such a high expectation. You know, lot less room than you'd expect for any sort of deviation or failure. So it was pretty high speed. I remember those guys. I remember also. I used to write the reenlistment bonus messages for the entire Navy, and I just remember some of those astronomical numbers that we would pay to the new trained sailors to keep them in.
Oh, I know.
And yet they'd still get out just because of the pressure and intensity. Mm-hmm. So to live through that fire certainly speaks well for you know, a foundation for the future.
The thing that I, you know, that I bring forward is before you do anything real important, rehearse it.
Sure.
And rehearse it in as much of the conditions that you're going to find when you actually do the work. And then separately, when you make a mistake, you know, or any, if even if you do well, go over and do an after action review on the whole thing. And the troubleshooting, you know, you just change one variable at a time. Then fast forward, when I got into the IT world, when you're troubleshooting, it's changed lots of variables, and then if it gets fixed, you're not sure which one of those things changed. And then rehearsing? Are you kidding?
he's revisiting my life, folks. Let's take a quick minute and go hear from our sponsor.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
And we're back with the new Cyber Frontier. I'm Abe Thompson here with our guest, retired Admiral Hank Bond. Admiral, you were talking about how you went from this meticulously disciplined world to then a field IT where there was so many rapidly changing and uncertain variables. And you brought some of the lessons forward, or how did you adjust?
Well, I just remember whenever in those situations where I had responsibility for supervising something, I just remember bringing things that were really part of my DNA into planning, and sure, so that we were going to have the best opportunity to be successful.
Sure.
I think that's the anybody that's been a nuke or understands nuclear power, the rigor behind reactor safety and all those sorts of things. I think that's a thing that, although it slows down, it actually speeds up, because your ability to recover from, you know, poor maintenance and actually just throwing in spare parts and then even breaking those, yeah, is you know, it's a higher cost to that than if you just sort of step back, think, and go forward.
Sure.
So I think that's sort of the legacy of my experience there.
Yeah. Legacy is a good way of putting it. I mean, we certainly pulled a lot forward with us. And so what kind of prepped you to kind of get into the actual leadership and sort of the understanding of IT as a discipline, and then even, you know, greater in cyber itself as a discipline? What prepped you to do well there?
Yeah, so what's interesting is I was coming along in a place where the Navy was saying, hey, you know, we're happy to have you step into this information technology area of the both Navy and the joint world, but we're not going to give you any formal training. I kept raising my hand, but could I go to grad school here? Could I go do that?
Sure.
No, you're doing fine. Just keep going. You know, so it was a transition for all of the services that way. We're trying to reorder their in strength and sort out what billets and you know, what ratings, how ratings would be adjusted to focus on things. And we got rid of the radio men. Rating and brought on the IT men and you know, those kinds of things. So it's a recognition that the network carries almost everything over IP. You know, there are certainly ship control systems and those kinds of things that are different kinds of protocols, but the thing that is, and there's some, you know, you still have synchronous radars and other kinds of data sets that are going off of antennas, but for the most part, more and more, we're routing everything as an IP, you know, as an IP data set. And the idea of shooting targets on IP kinds of things is interesting, because it's not exactly real time. You know, you have some latency that's built in there.
Yeah.
So how to grapple with that? I think what helped me the most, to answer your question, was, again, kind of that nuclear mindset, because I was brought up in the Navy as a systems thinker. Everything's related. There's a design and a purpose for everything to give you room to maneuver.
Sure.
Understanding, you know, materials and the ability to stress something in wartime or when you really got to go fast, understanding where your real margins to the limits really are so that you can be safe. All of that just translates nicely into every other part of life.
Sure.
So when it comes to how does the military embrace information technology, moving away from paper. I mean, I was teaching at submarine school after my first submarine. I was teaching and developing curriculum by hand,
right.
Handing it to a typing pool of which those folks would pound away at their typewriters, and then I'd get back the first approximation of what I wrote by handwriting, and I'd get it, and I'd make corrections, and we'd go back and forth a few times, and the thing would end up into the new curriculum. While I was there, we fired all those folks and brought in computers, and now, Lieutenant Bond was writing my own thing using, programs that don't even exist anymore. Harvard Graphics, remember all
right,
that? Yeah, all gone. Well, and WordStar and WordPerfect and all that stuff.
And we thought that was a sea change.
Yeah.
And then, it seems like every year there's a rapid change in this cyber world.
Yeah, so I think the point is, the good thing about the military is you're really set up to be agile and receive new technology and understand how to integrate it and get the most out of it. The problem with IT is the military can really only buy COTS.
Yeah.
And then it's an integration, issue on how to bring it in and how to, scratch your head and understand what's the real downside or risk. How do you measure risk in terms of operating this mechanical system using software?
Sure.
Fly by wire, fly by software. I mean, some things when you have a cold boot on an airplane, that means you're falling out of the sky.
And can we trust this commercial off the shelf system to actually integrate well with military systems and meet our security requirements, and will the boss trust his information to this system, and
absolutely.
How do we vet it?
Yeah, I remember in the 90s talking to one of the leaders of our special operations forces back then. Now back then in the 90s, before 2001, before 9/11, really the soft forces were very stovepiped, and it was a need to know in those days. And so I remember one of the, three-star leaders in the joint world saying, you know what, we're just going to isolate ourselves from the network, and that's the way we'll be safe, which was obviously a misunderstanding. If you were to take the Navy, for example, just take the Navy, really any of the expeditionary forces, and you were to pull them off of the Nippernet or the Internet, essentially the unclassified network, If you're going to do that, in 3 days, everything stops because all fresh fruit and vegetables goes away. There's no resupply. You might be able to go a little longer in unit levels, but for the most part, everything stops in about 3 days. There's certainly the Navy would. The surface Navy just slows down, stops, everybody gets hungry.
Sure. And there's a tremendous vulnerability there.
Because logistics runs on the network.
And we, as a Navy, have always, dwarfed sort of the other capabilities in the world. Because of our ability to sustain at sea and to replenish and do some of those things. And here now with all this technology, we introduce different kind of vulnerabilities.
Absolutely. And I think that's the problem, the grand problem is to look at a capability that now is the commons for commerce and essentially all information sharing is built on a protocol that by design was not secure because you couldn't have cryptography, crossing borders.
Sure.
So, these session encryption kinds of things that we do now that we just assume, that we just take for granted, they didn't exist. And when you talk to Vint Cerf, one of the two guys that developed the internet protocol back in the TCP/IP back in 1973.
So even somebody preceded Al Gore in inventing
the
internet.
I think so. I think that's true. I think that's true, yeah. So he said that, there was no security whatsoever in this thing. And so the wonderful part of the internet and the protocols that run it is that it's collaborative. The vulnerability to all those technologies is that it's collaborative. So, now with, hacking and life hack of any kind is to misuse the system design to gain an advantage in a way that you want.
Sure.
And
so,
frankly, there's just no end to the misuse of the way things are designed because you're just not going to get it right. The use case is never the case that's actually used from the design.
Well, the ingenuity of sailors that we grew up with, they hack the system quite often to make things work, to you know, not to...
Hacking my stove an hour ago at home, trying to get that thing to work.
Hey, it's working now, it's cooking the chicken, or whatever the case might be. Yeah, so it's this, there's a spirit of ingenuity there, and we understand it, and it's, you know, part of this technology world, and my goodness, the speed of transformation is you know, light years ahead of where it was when, you know, when we were doing some of these things early on. Before we go on, let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsor. And we're back at New Cyber Frontier. My name is Abe Thompson here at the SecureSat Studios in Colorado Springs. I'm with Admiral Hank Bond, retired United States Navy. So, sir, we were just talking about, you know, sort of this matriculation and changes in your experience, even in history. I'm interested, too, because of the jobs you've had. What you've seen that's led to success in preparing cyber warriors? Because a lot of folks out here are saying, how do I get my people ready? What type of training does it take for me to get into the industry? And, you know, what things do I need to look for? So what's been some of your experience there?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question because, you know, the marketplace is not resolved on the mechanisms with which to do that, where there's agreement across the board.
Yeah.
And so I think the thing that I've learned both in my military experience and then my private private commercial experience is that the cyber problem is a human problem. So it takes a human to defeat a human. Yeah. So the idea that all I'm going to do is buy another appliance or some signature-based thing or an IDS or a border gateway thing to block and I'm going to have now a protected inside is really, at this point, is irresponsible to think that. So I think the best way to prepare the workforce to do a defensive role, okay, because there's military purposes that will be on the intelligence or the warfare side, but on the defensive role, which is what everybody's problem is, and frankly, that's the place where we can make the biggest gains.
Sure.
Is to think as much as you can to think like the attacker. So what does that mean? It means to understand for your business context what the likely threat will be. And that is a knowable thing. The attribution is not that difficult.
Sure.
Through the proper employment of threat intelligence, marrying that with your own defenders, and frankly, whether you're a small mom and pop shop where you're outsourcing all your IT, or you're a top 10 bank, a top 10 company in the world, Fortune 10, you're still have the same problem. It's just a matter of scale.
Right.
And the issue is, who is likely to be your biggest threat in the market vertical that you're in? Understanding, because it's knowable, what the playbook is, and then understand how would you recognize an indication of compromise in your network? So if you're running databases, or if you're running some of your back office in terms of email and other services, network services, every one of those operators that is providing the network and the capability for your finances, for essentially desktop services for your employees, your just normal, normal employees, everybody needs to understand what an indication of compromise would look like. And that would include phishing, social engineering against email, against you as a user, the common user on the net, or your system administrator or the database administrator, anybody that touches the network, what would it look like for the playbook most likely to be used against you for compromises? Then marry up opportunities to bring in technology. So technology helps everybody. Mm-hmm. However, it's still a very human thing. Yeah. What is that? What's the motive? Are they trying to steal my intellectual property? Are they stealing credit card receipts? Is it a point of sale attack? Is it are they going to shut me down? Are there issues that would get the anonymous, crowd against me? Those are knowable things, and what you're talking about is not complete certainty. you're just reducing uncertainty to a point that you can manage the risk. And for those that are responsible to provide, you know, to deliver the service, if you're in the operations business of your company, you want to make sure that you've got enough talent on board that can actually go against and is trained to recognize what's going on and then to deal with the issues. So what does it take? I think it takes the better you are at understanding networks, network protocols, operating systems, and then depending on what your business is, it may be at the application level, what's going on. And then all of the connection points, do you have vendors that are coming in, understanding where the risk is with vendors that help you with your business. So someone's got to be a conductor. Usually they call those the chief information security officer. Yeah. And somewhere in there is the chief information officer also. Those two are key to have good understanding of an integrated defense against the likely threat. To that, then, you're able to train your onboard. If you have an organic staff, right, you can train them to be aware of what's going on. You may want to augment with some high-end, sure, response and detection incident kinds of folks to help you. Right. But frankly, it's really a matter of making sure you train your folks. Now, that's a big, and I'll just say one more thing, that's a hard challenge for the military. They'd rather buy boxes. They'd rather buy devices than people. Training people is very, very expensive. Burning a box here and there and a system here, you can replace those. So, So when it comes to the way the military spends money, it's not a lot different than the way the commercial sector does, or the public sector for, you know, states and regions and so forth, big cities. So what I think is most interesting is that there is a reluctance to train your folks. Yeah. So I've heard, and I just will finish my comment with this. Sure. Someone might say, well, if we train them, you know, get them up to speed, if we train them, they will leave. But the answer to that is, if we don't train them, they will stay.
Yeah,
and then it means you're unarmed in a battle of wits, right, and so which would you rather have? So those are all substantial and consequential kinds of conversations that have big dollar price tags, but it's really risk management and how much, you know, where's the next dollar I want to spend? Sure. I think most companies are spending between, you know, about 5 to 6% of all of their revenue on IT, and of that budget, whatever that budget is, say that's X, then about 5% of X on security. Yeah. So it's a tiny number compared to really the amount of money that you're talking about. So there, a lot of corporate boards are rethinking that and making investments that are more in line with what will actually keep their business safe.
Well, and what we've learned too, and we see constantly, is that this is very different than our experience in the military, where we had a career, quote unquote, in one place. What we often now see is, and if you take the long view, you invest in your people, because yes, they might leave at this level, but you never know if they might not come back later, you know, in a senior level position or a mid-level position. And so career progression in cybersecurity, I'm realizing, is often different organizations rather than, monolithic.
You know, there are some progressive thinkers out there.
Yeah.
And this is now about 15 years ago, but I remember talking with the HR lead at a very big IT company that's a big hardware company that everybody, sure, you know, most likely may even have computers made by them or networking equipment made by them,
sure,
in your network. And they were... Their model back then, this is like 2004, their model was every year we want to cycle through 10% of our workforce at all levels in order to make sure that we're fresh. And at that point, they were like at 4%, and they were well behind where they wanted to be. And they had exactly the same thought. Sure. They were going to find their senior managers' roles in other companies, knowing that going to the competition or in other areas, other sectors, would be, you know, might be a little bit of a kick in the gut. But... and overall, they're going to get those guys back potentially, five years later,
sure,
at a new level, refreshed and renewed with new vision. So that kind of thinking, I think, is the ecosystem that you're talking about. Certainly cities that espouse the cyber, a cyber density of a workforce ought to be thinking that way. Companies, sure, ought to be thinking, okay, you know, the managers ought to be looking at companies that are in their ecosystem in the same zip code, so they don't have to have moving from to different cities, and looking for those progressions and mentoring. So those are all things that I think they're old, but they've been largely forgotten in the IT world, because IT is thought of as a commodity, but today it's not. It's lifeblood, and especially those cyber warriors, those defenders, they're worth their weight in gold.
And it's still a people business. Earlier today, I recorded a session with the director of cybersecurity programs for the Chamber of Commerce here in Colorado Springs, and we are definitely, I think, capturing here that concept of cybersecurity ecosystem and how we do this as a community.
Yeah.
And I'm very encouraged.
I love this town. I think this town is in a great place. There's great leadership at a bunch of different levels in the companies and then in the city. The business community is very vibrant here,
sure.
And it's a real positive note.
You know, one other thing that you'd said in terms of that cyber warrior, how you get the expertise, you hit on that having a good ability to find the data sets to bring in that you can actually use for the threat stream. Now, where you and I grew up in the Navy, we had a pretty clear direction as to where our touch team came from. We had our intelligence agencies, we had both the three letters and then the internal to the military. Now, you moved, though, from that into CISO-type roles and corporate role. Where are folks out there that are looking to find that threat stream that's maybe relevant to their organization? Where do they go to find it?
Yeah, so I think at a really high level, and there might not be the fidelity that you want in terms of actionable information.
Right.
But if you're just starting business, most likely you probably know who the threat's coming from. But if you don't, just going to DHS, Department of Homeland Security, in the various information sharing and analysis centers of our critical infrastructure, I think there's about 16 of those, maybe 17 with space now added as the new ISAC hosted here in Colorado Springs, here soon. Through that information source, there is sharing with other parts of the government on what threat actors are moving and operating, and then providing a safe place to share information. But beyond that, you've got lots of companies out there that are providing threat information, and they're doing what. And I have to say, when I transitioned out of active duty, I thought, oh man, all the good stuff's going to be gone because you know, the good stuff is in the classified space and using sensors and things like that. Well, actually, it's not true.
Sure.
In fact, there is a whole lot more that you can do outside of the government channels in understanding what's going on. There's a whole lot of other feeds that you can subscribe to. I mean, just, you know, do a Google search on threat data and threat data providers, and you're going to find people that will be happy to take your money to provide that.
Sure.
So the question is, you can get some broad things from the government, but then what you have to do is decide, for your particular application, what is going to be the optimum use of resources, money, to provide a threat intel piece, if you will, for the threat against your vertical. Let's say you're in manufacturing or retail or healthcare. Those threat actors will be different, and they move at different speeds, and there's different nation states and transnational criminal organizations that are very well or not so well funded, but they all have motive and they do have resources.
Right.
The question will be how to optimize the use of that data that you can buy, and with the level of your operator training and the ability for you to take that information and turn that into actual, have your defenders look in a certain space based on the threat against you. So all of that, you don't want to be heavy on threat information, but you have no operators to do anything.
Right.
You're just spending your money. So it really is an orchestration, and it's an optimization problem that is very noble. So there's lots of information out there.
One of the good old days, we used to call that tailored intel, right? Mm-hmm. And learning how to do that. And in order to do that, you know, you have to have a couple cyber warriors. You know, even our small organizations out here can't outsource everything. And so you get someone trained that can interpret and help you fine-tune that incoming product. I think you're going to have great success. Well, sir, it's been beyond a delight to spend the time with you today. Having walked in some of the similar paths in the good old days, and then, I enjoy the privilege of being your friend and colleague here in Colorado Springs, and so I look forward to further conversations. We're definitely going to want to have you come back on the show.
Abe, it's been a delight. Thank you so very much. Looking forward to it.
Oh, indeed. Well, this is Abe Thompson here at the New Cyber Frontier. We've had Admiral Hank Bond here with us, retired United States Navy. Just a storied background of leadership not only the DoD world, but also in the civilian sector. And it's been our privilege to have him here on board. So to those of you in podcast world, have a great day. This is Abe Thompson from New Cyber Frontier.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.